Accessing library computer data.
The world doesn't always adhere to logic. And sometimes when you're lost, you're found.
Hey everybody, welcome back to the podcast. Hope you enjoyed the first two episodes of Star Trek Discovery. If you had, you'd probably come back and you want to hear what we are going to be thinking about. Context is for Kings, which is the third episode of the first season. In this episode, Michael Burnham finds herself aboard the USS Discovery, where she quickly realizes things are not as they seem, including the mysterious Captain Gabriel Lorca. Directed by Akiva Goldsman, story goes to Brian Fuller, Gretchen Berg, and Aaron Harberts. The screenplay goes to Gretchen Berg, Aaron Harberts, and Craig Sweeney. This aired on October 1st, 2017. And Clay, its context is for Kings. It's not cough drops are for Kings. But how are you doing otherwise?
I'm doing well. I have a black alert inside my sinuses right now. So it's a little bit... I'll try not to be sound too gross tonight while I'm talking.
That's fine. We'll bring in a homosexual character who will give you a little bit of attitude about it. And otherwise, we'll move on from there.
Which one was the homosexual character?
Well, he's been announced to be gay. It's the Stamets, the guy who's sort of the scientist who's in charge and explains the whole biology thing.
Yeah. Okay. That's what I figured.
Yeah. He's not rumored. He's one of the gay characters that they're bringing on, but we haven't met his significant other at this point.
I thought he's having, apparently this guy he's talking to is his boyfriend, but it was not his boyfriend. It was just his friend.
Yes, because that guy dies, I think. But we'll get into all of this, I think. We're going to be talking about Context is for Kings. I'm going to play an audio clip, and then me and Sick Clay are going to come back, and we're going to break it all down for you.
No matter how deep in space you are, I always feel like you can see home, don't you think? Maybe it's just me. Forgive the lighting, lack thereof. A recent battle injury. There's nothing they can do if I want to keep my own eyes, and I do. To suffer light change slowly. I like to think it makes me mysterious. No? Captain Gabriel Lorca, welcome to Discovery.
All right, Clay, so I want to get into the first part by saying recording the pilot for this one, I was a little bit nervous for some reason. It was a little bit of an unknown territory. We were both going into a show where neither of us knew what we were going to be talking about. On a selfish level, I thought that maybe the Discovery podcast would get picked up by more people because it's a new show and people would be searching for content to listen to. I was a little bit reticent, I think, in talking about that show. I don't know if I did a particularly good job examining what it was all about, although the prologue-iness of it kind of threw me off a little bit. So this is the real pilot of the show, I guess you could say, because we're done with the prologue backstory. We've gone through the two episodes that would normally be done in a sort of sentence and a half explaining a character in the real pilot. And here we are on the USS Discovery, meeting Captain Lorca, meeting all the other crew members, meeting all the people who have names in the credits at this point.
Mm.
And so now we're kind of into the show, and I think that we're going to be able to talk about it. So my leadoff question for you is, where we both thought the prologue was a good couple episodes, and we thought it felt very Star Trek-y, and we thought it was appropriate, and we were interested to see where we should be, how worried should I be after watching Context is for Kings? Does that make sense to you? Do you sort of know what I'm getting at here, I guess? How do you want to react to that statement?
Yeah, I think I know what you're getting at in essence, if not specifically. I did not like this one as much as the previous two, and it seemed like it was is too modern a bad way to say it?
No, I think that's fair.
Because it kind of took a lot of the Star Trek stuff that, you know, we kind of enjoyed about the first two and kind of threw it out the window in favor of making sure that every character seemed to have an ulterior motive. And like, when they started making the captain really kind of like mysterious and ambiguous, I was kind of really turned off by that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. It's like they had, you know, I liked it. What I did like about it was that there seemed to be the structure of it seemed to be what I assumed it was going to be, which was following the main Klingon War storyline, but also having but the actual meat of the story being sort of like an away mission or like a, you know, something that's not directly just the next beat in that storyline. But aside from that, yeah, I don't know. It was, I don't think I like this one.
No, I didn't. I was, I didn't like this episode as much as the first two. And I think that on its face of being its own episode, I wasn't crazy about it. I think we're going to spend the whole series saying like, well, we'll see how this pans out in the future going forward. But as it stood, I thought that, like you said, it took a lot of what made the first two episodes feel like Star Trek, and it kind of replaced them with a lot of modern TV tropes that I don't really like in a lot of ways. Like, yeah. the characters are, like, so far, this is by far the most dysfunctional crew we've ever seen in Starfleet, right? Like, people seem borderline incapable of doing their jobs in certain situations, and, you know, Stamets's role, he's the scientist who's working on the sort of biological spore weapon or whatever it is that they're handling here, or a transportation device.
That's how they should have explained it in the show, because that's how I felt after they tried to explain it to me. I was like, what? You can biological transportation, and now you're like, I don't know. It's like the space internet, kind of?
Sort of. Well, I mean, we'll get into that, I think, a little bit later. But the Stamets thing to me was weird, because the way that Stamets was talking to Lorca made it feel like that character should not be a part of Starfleet, right? Like, that's how the non-Starfleet people talk to each other.
Yeah.
And him being in uniform is kind of balanced out by the fact that Lorca, as a captain character, seems to be the most unregulated out of all the captains we've seen so far. Like, he's not one to sort of obey the rules. He has the line, context is for kings, because he's a character who believes that depending on the situation, your actions will change accordingly. Uh-huh. And so I think that's fine. But what did you think of the entire, what did you think of the crew interactions here, which I think is one of the bigger parts of the episode, showing how everyone is going to be reacting to each other and to Michael, who's making her first appearance on the ship.
I didn't really like them. You know, that's really simplistic of me to say, but yeah, I mean, you know, so yeah, as far as the crew goes, the one character I actually kind of did, maybe I just have a type, but I like the security officer. I wouldn't be surprised if her last name was Yar, because she had kind of a Tasha Yar thing about her, which of course I like. So
she's the commander that meets them when they get on the ship.
Yes, I just assumed she was the security officer. Is she not the security officer?
I don't know. She carries herself that way. I don't actually.
Well, whatever.
Know. Yeah,
whoever she was at first, I was put off by her because I don't know. It, like the tough thing about this is I'm not sure where I'm supposed to leave my preconceived notions of what Star Trek is supposed to be like with this show. So when they first arrive to the ship and they're met by that character, she seemed like a very modern kind of hard-ass character. And I couldn't reconcile whether or not that felt out of place for Star Trek. And right. Then I was thinking, well, does it matter? I mean, should I not just let this thing play out and see how it goes? Do I, you know, it's a weird line to try and walk as someone who's trying to view and review this in the context of the whole series, the whole franchise, you know?
Yeah. And I think we're also sort of shooting ourselves in the foot because we're reacting to this immediately. You know, we just watched the episode on a Sunday night and we're sitting down now to sort of talk about it. And I think that going forward, it might be something worth considering whether or not we need a night to sleep on these episodes. But we can talk about that at the end of the podcast, or if people have any thoughts about it. But I mean, in more senses that I felt like that failed me in the prologues, where there was a lot of stuff that I felt that I wanted to talk about and I kind of missed it, and it was only on reflection of what we talked about that I was like, oh, I kind of shouldn't have spent so much time talking about that. I should have talked about something else. Mm-hmm. Here, I feel like this episode is easier to discuss because it's a lot simpler in what's going on. And there's not really a lot of layered nuance here. But I'll start off by just saying that when you touch back on the characters, to me, this episode felt, I would be concerned that, you know, going on all the internet rabble and chatter about people who are just sort of, were angry about Discovery when the prologue two episodes came out, and they're saying this doesn't feel like Star Trek and everything. I really disagreed with that. I think this episode gives them fodder for that argument, that it's too drastic of a change in a lot of ways. And like you were saying, it's hard to see how far we should disconnect ourselves. It's like context is for kings, I suppose, in judging this episode. But I just feel that... let me say this one thing before we go off. There's a Trek About Who's a podcast that has come on the show here. In their episode, in their discussion of the first two episodes, Eric on that show made a good point that he was kind of hoping for... With the serialization of this show, which is unique to a Star Trek series, that he was hoping it would be more of a Mad Men serialization than a Breaking Bad serialization. Mm-hmm. And if people are unfamiliar, Breaking Bad serialization it's a very plot-heavy show that, like, you have to see each episode to drive the next episode's action. And right. Mad Men is much more of, while there are arcs going on across the season and across the series and everything, each episode of Mad Men tends to act as a standalone episode that you can watch independently.
Right.
And I was kind of hoping Star Trek would go that route, and it seems that they're not doing that. They're going like a hard one storyline story so far, judging on the three episodes we've seen and the upcoming next week on Discovery stuff that you get at the end of it.
Right.
Do you have any thoughts about that? Do you think that weighs into the way that you're viewing it, or were you hoping for more of a standalone episode? Maybe not at this point, but in the next episode?
Yeah. You know, I think so. Going back to the characters, it kind of is all encompassed in what I'm going to say here. I think that Breaking Bad mentality is not suited for this show. Not because it can't be, but because if you think back to Breaking Bad, right? By the end, we're three episodes deep into this show, right? By the third episode of Breaking Bad, you know who Walter is, you know who Jesse is, you know who Walter's family is, and those characters are pretty well established right away. This show has not done that. I don't blame the prologue thing because it's tough because I gave the prologue first two episodes a big pass because the focus was supposed to be on Michael, and I just assumed that, okay, they're not giving you anything for the crew because this is not that it's not the time for that stuff. That stuff, when she gets on her real ship, then you'll meet the crew and all that kind of shit. Now that she's on the new ship, I don't think that she's got any good characters to work with. And if they do, again, it's unfair because technically this is basically we're starting back at one again. But none of those characters that they introduced as recurring characters on the show really, I don't know anything about them. There's nothing about them that really hooked me.
I'd say Saru is the only exception, and we've met him before.
Yeah, he's the only one. Yeah. And there was one thing that they did that really made me, my eyebrows go up, because I hate it. I hate when they do this, and it's always a sign of lazy writing, is the fucking fortune cookie thing. it's like they're writing a character that they need to give him like a quirky thing to do to give him quote unquote character because they haven't written a character for the guy.
Sure.
And so his thing is, oh yeah, I've got fortune cookie. You know, there's you can spot that stuff a mile away, or I should say you can spot that stuff all the time when they do it if you're looking for it. And like the captain's a really good example because I don't know, I didn't really get much from him in this.
I think the performance is better than the character is at this point.
Oh, 100%. Jason Isaacs is a great actor, but like he's not really doesn't really have much to do. He's just sort of like, I thought his, you know, delivery was good, and I thought his he has the appropriate level of grandeur to be a Starfleet captain, I think.
Yes, as opposed to Georgiou, we kind of had a problem with her being a captain. I think he fits the mold of what a And he seems to be highly regarded, right? Because he's given a lot of leeway, according to him, and what he's allowed to do. So he seems to be well regarded. He's that kind of thing. Yeah, sorry, go ahead. And didn't mean to interrupt.
No, it's just I didn't really, I don't know. I didn't really get him. Maybe I just didn't stick to. How did you feel? Like, do you feel a similar way? I don't know if I'm just not articulating it or something.
To me, the problem with Lorca seemed that he's a pure. He's kind of a, like, I'm not saying they're 100% analogy, but he reminds me of the Bane performance in Dark Knight, where the performance overshadows. I don't understand any of the motivation that's going on, and a lot of that is because we've only spent 40 minutes with Lorca to this point.
Yeah, yeah.
And the one thing I'd be concerned about is that I saw the plot mechanics from the beginning of the episode. Like, I saw how this is all going to unfold, and it unfolded exactly how I thought it would. And he's not. He, to me, the episode wandered this really bad Trek line of, we've mentioned this before, where characters in a show like this have information and just no one wants to say the information for no good reason to explain what's going on. Like, you know, right. Burnham's whole role, and this ties into the Lorca thing, Burnham's whole role here is that she's put into positions where she gets a lot of information about what's going on, but people don't want to connect the dots for her for apparently no reason, even though they're giving her all this confidential information.
Yeah.
So
why
draw it out? Why don't you just explain what's going on? And then at the end, Lorca kind of does the explanation, although my problem there is this duplicitous? It seems to be based on the way that they shoot him smirking as he walks away from that hell beast from Doom at the very end.
Yeah.
and the other thing is just that, you know, like, I don't know. It's like, why we know that this transportation system is not going to stick around. This goes back to my problem with the prequels. Like, we know that something has to go wrong with this thing because they don't use this method of transportation in the future.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, to kick it back to you, the Lorca thing is just that he is not well developed enough, and he seems a little bit too cliche at this point, where I was hoping where he'd be a little bit more of an original type of Star Trek creation, and he seems more like he's just the duplicitous captain that I would assume is no longer captain at the end of season one. Does that make sense? You know what I mean?
Yeah. Excuse me. Yeah. Just overall, I guess, you know, it's funny. I found myself thinking about Deep Space Nine a lot when I was watching this, the pilot of Deep Space Nine, because I didn't really care for the pilot of Deep Space Nine that much. I think it's kind of hokey. I think the character introductions are kind of hokey, but the characters are, they're pretty, you get a lot out of not really having a lot, them not really having a lot of screen time. And again, I don't know if this is a problem with the show in general, or if it's just me thinking about it in too strict of a terms for Star Trek, because the other way that I was thinking about it was, well, kind of piggybacking off of my thoughts about the first two, you could make the argument that, well, this is Burnham's story. It's not necessarily the story about the crew the way that it usually is in the past. So we're only going to learn about the crew as much as she does in the time that she does it, sort of thing. But I don't know. I think that's, I don't know if that's the best way to go. All the characters just left me really flat. Like the engineering guy left me really flat. He was just like, I was waiting for something to jump out and be and say like, oh yeah, this is the Star Trek engineering character. I don't mean that in a cliche way, but like you know it when you see it, you
right
know?
yeah.
And you know, the only person who had like any personality was her weird roommate, and even that was like, I don't know what the hell she does on that ship. What is her purpose other than to be like, oh, you're sleeping, oh, it's my bed. You know, like,
right.
I don't know.
The nervous Nellie who wants to be the captain, basically.
First of all, maybe we'll talk about this in a separate section. Why the fuck are they putting her in a room with a cadet?
Right.
She's a prisoner. Why is all of a sudden she's on this ship and she has free reign over the ship? Even from the captain's point of view, why does he have the latitude to be like, oh, don't worry about your court martial and your fucking life sentence?
Right.
You're now back in Starfleet. Why does he have the ability to do that? Or does he? Or is the Discovery? Yeah, go ahead.
Well, I'm sorry, but do you think he's operating outside of his bounds, I guess, would be the, you know, like, is he a rogue captain out there doing something? I mean, he could be, but it makes no sense to me that he has a large crew working for him. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, there's a lot of people who seem to believe in this mission or whatever, and he seems to be in contact with Starfleet. He gets all these high risk communications and everything like that. So I don't know. It's one of those things I'll have to explain going forward.
Yeah, it's like, you know, if the situation is Burnham is on the ship because, you know, she's being transported somewhere and there's a holdover on the Discovery. And then something happens on the Discovery that forces her to become part of the situation. And then from that point on, you know, it's like, oh, well, we can't have her on here because she's the mutineer. But, oh, I have the skills, you know, one of those things. And then from that point on, it's like this uneasy relationship with her on the ship out of necessity. I didn't get anything from anything of that, like, in this, other than the fact that the captain just wants her on the ship.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, there's no, I don't even know. He keeps talking about her like she's got some special ability. And apparently all she can do is read code. This person has been sentenced to life in prison for mutiny and starting a fucking intergalactic war. What can she do? What has she done that makes it okay for you to commute her sentence and then put her back in a Starfleet uniform?
Yeah, he just says at the end that he likes her cojones. And whole context is King scene. He's just like, you know, sometimes you got to break a couple eggs to make an omelet. And I respect the fact that you broke a lot of eggs. So
at the very least, don't put her in a fucking Starfleet. You can do the thing where she's on the ship and she's technically still a prisoner, but secretly she's working for the captain or something.
Right.
No, just for all that cool stuff that we did in the first two episodes to make it different. Just forget that we did that. We're going to put her in the suit, and it's just going to be like another Star Trek show, except for the fact that she's kind of dark because she has a weird backstory.
Yeah. You know, I don't know why this triggered the memory in it, why this triggered the thought in me, but why do they all – they're all wearing blue uniforms, right? Is it just the trim that's different on their – I think that the color of the uniforms makes it difficult for me to distinguish the characters, at least this early going.
Well,
you know,
it's like the piping on the shoulders, and then like the flank of the uniform is different.
And their little insignia, I think, is different depending on what group they're in. I might be imagining that, but
yeah, the base is blue. Yeah,
yeah. It's just a little odd. And I 100% agree with you about the fact that it ties into my thing about Lorca. Lorca's too cliche for me at this point. I think that was the biggest letdown for me, is how much of a cliched, morally gray character he is at this point.
Yeah.
Maybe this will change going forward, but they introduced a lot of his rationale in this episode, or lack of rationale, I guess, if you want to look at it that way. And nothing here... I probably would have enjoyed him better if they didn't have the obvious him sitting in his, like, predator skull lab at the very end.
Yeah, that was pretty dumb.
It's just too... Is there any way that this character is not up to something duplicitous and evil? You know what I mean? Like, is there any way that this character is doing a good job or something for the good that we're just not seeing? Or do you think that's extremely unlikely at this point?
No, I think honestly that is probably the case. I don't think that it's going to come out that he's doing anything duplicitous, if I had to take a guess. Because, I mean, I don't know, maybe they just did this to throw you off the scent, but they do a small version of that reveal earlier in the episode. And when she's like, I know why you want me here. You want you because you're building a weapon and, you know, you're building a biological weapon that violates the Geneva Convention and you need me for something. And then he's like, actually, no, we're making this... warp drive thing.
Yeah.
So like there's a mini version of that. So I wouldn't be surprised if they did the same thing later where it's like, oh, it seems like he's really in it for this reason, but it turns out, nope, he's just doing something for the grid. You know, one of those things.
Sure.
I don't know. I would be I feel like, so I feel like that would be a bridge too far for me.
Sorry, what would be a bridge too far?
Making him some sort of duplicitous villain character.
Okay.
I don't know. Damn it. I wish I hadn't like looked at so many other opinions of the show, because now I'm like, I have it in my head, like this idea of what I want Star Trek to look like. And I really don't want to think about it that way. But like, I don't, if I'm thinking about the show as the point of view of what I want from a Star Trek show, I think having your main character be a mutineer who starts a galactic war inadvertently is a step out of the box enough that if you just went another step further and had the main captain of the ship be a straight up bad guy or whatever, I don't know. That just seems like it's a big, like, what are we even doing here then?
Right.
You know, yeah, it's just like any other show.
Yeah. I think that the episode went a little bit too far in the non Star Trek-y way, in that the sort of the way that they go about the story here doesn't feel Star Trek-y to me. And the way that in the prologue, the entire way that they went about that mission felt very Star Trek-y to me.
Yeah,
like it was a modernization of how a Star Trek show from the 90s would have accomplished its goal. Here, like the biggest takeaway is that the away mission is bizarre that they go on.
You mean you didn't like it when they go to the Event Horizon?
Right. They do go. I got an Event Horizon at the very end when the camera pans away from Lorca looking out the window too, which is basically what they do in that movie.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, just the oddness of it felt like a Silent Hill or Dead Space, the video game Dead Space, where it's like you're hunting these fast-moving things. No one seems particularly perturbed when those fast-moving things show up, even though they don't seem to be expecting them.
Yeah.
And then you have a bunch of Klingons, and one Klingon walks in and whispers and then dies in some sort of bizarre horror show type thing.
Yeah, I was expecting the main body of the episode to take place on that ship. I was thinking in old Star Trek terms. I was thinking, oh, okay, away mission to this ship that's been, everybody's dead on it. They're going to go to the ship. They're going to get stuck on the ship. They're going to have to solve some problem there. Oh, the Klingon. Okay, they'll have to work with the Klingon, et cetera, et cetera. You know, that kind of thing. But no, it was just, can you tell me why they were, what they got there while they were there? Because they went through this whole sequence where they're getting chased down by that fucking thing, and then she goes into the Jeffries tube and starts quoting Lewis Carroll for some reason.
Yeah, right.
And then they get back to the ship, and I was like, okay, why did we do that? What did they bring back with them?
I think they got information about, they knew that it was the spores or something. It's all about the spores, I think, at that point, right? Like, so
cool.
So, I mean, what happened on that ship is an experiment of the warp drive gone wrong, right? That's what we're supposed to understand. So what they got from it doesn't seem like anything that was worth going over there for. Like, I think I agree with you that I would have rather had some sort of technological malfunction where they're stranded on the ship, and slowly by being on the ship, they learn the mystery of what's going on around them.
Yeah, and you can, that way you would have Burnham interacting with the crew members in a more substantial way.
Yep.
Yeah, and you get to know the characters as she gets to know the characters, et cetera.
Yeah, I just think that it was poorly thought out, I think.
Yeah, like, I, you know, that what I just described as far as, you know, being stuck on the ship, that's a pretty cliche plot line. And I'm not saying that, like, I wish they were doing something more cliche, but it's like, if you look at what they did do, I don't know why they did it. You know,
right.
I don't know what. There was a lot in this episode that didn't really, I don't know. This episode has left me confused, I think. I don't know. I don't know where I am with the show in terms of whether or not it's turning me off now because of it's doing something different than what I expect it should do.
Yeah.
Or if it's just straight up not good, or this episode was just straight up not good. I'm kind of at a loss.
I think that Let me know if you disagree with my take on it. To me, the episode overall felt like a move away from a lot of the Star Trek-y aspects into a modern TV show that is too cliche to last. If this is what the show is going forward, I don't think it's interesting enough to really be worth continuing with.
Yeah.
And that sounds very harsh for how early we are. But like, if this show just becomes a sort of sci-fi network show that has the trappings of Star Trek in it, I don't think that's particularly interesting. It's not like this show is a prestige TV show that's mixed up with Star Trek. Does that make sense? Like, this is not Breaking Bad or The Sopranos or Mad Men in a Star Trek universe. The show isn't at that level. It feels much more of a cliched network TV show. And I think that they're at an interesting place. If that's what they want to do, I think you have to embrace more of the Star Trek angles going forward. Just at least, you know, give the crowd the red meat that they want at that point.
Right, right.
And I was hoping for something else. I was hoping for a modernization of Star Trek.
You mean the tribble on the captain's desk didn't do it for you?
Yeah, he does have a tribble, right? I heard it. I didn't see it.
Yeah, I
heard it chirping away, and that you hear it a couple times. If he's got tribbles, I'm not going to get into a whole TOS discussion.
He is in for some antics.
He's in for something. What did you think of the? Let's see here. I guess we should talk about we can talk about the little the alien that they get away from the away mission, I guess, first. So I called it the Doom monster because it looks a lot like the monsters in the Doom from like 2010 or whatever that video game came out. But it reminded me heavily of Force Awakens, that scene.
Yep, I was thinking the same thing.
Yeah, and then, you know, he's got it at the end in a cage. And apparently no one else on the crew except for that security officer knows that it's in there. Where do you think this goes from here? Is he developing a biological weapon, if you had to guess at this point?
I can tell you the answer that is more concerning to me.
Sure.
Is that I don't care.
Sure.
You know, the monster thing on the ship, whatever. I didn't care about it. Like, and then at the end, yeah, sure, why not? Yeah, I guess that's a way to show that he's up to something, but like, who cares? Like, what? I don't know. It's,
you know what,
I didn't understand what we gained in this episode. Like, so from the beginning where she gets to the ship and the end where she is now Starfleet officer again or whatever, which personally I think should be the end of the season. Why not have that be the arc of the season, is her working through her redemption in order to become a Starfleet person again.
Do we actually know that she's back at this point? Like, I just want to be sure.
In the preview for the next episode, she is wearing a Starfleet.
Oh, okay. All right. Yeah. Okay. So that makes sense.
But like between those two those two poles, what is the story of this episode?
Right.
You know, what is the A to B to C of this episode? Like, what are we learning? Why are we doing it? Who gives a shit?
Sure.
You know, it's tough because it is kind of like another pilot. But if this was the pilot of the show, I don't think I would be coming back for more.
Right. Yeah. I think
like there's just nothing interesting. Like, there's nothing that interests me from a Star Trek angle, and there's nothing that interests me from just like a general ideas or story angle, you know?
Yeah, you know what? There was one thing that sort of caught my ear. It's the USS Discovery, right? This is the first time we've seen the Discovery in the show.
I like the look of the ship.
Yeah, I think it's cool. And there's a line when Saru is walking with Burnham through, he drops a line about how Discovery has the most science labs out of any Federation starship, and hence the name Discovery.
Yeah.
That was cool. We spent very little time with the Discovery. I could have done another 10 minutes of getting to know the ship in a lot of ways. Like, this is going to be the, you know, if we're going by the title of this ship, the title of the show is always a kind of an important ship to the show. We're going to be spending a lot of time in Discovery, and we didn't get a... you know, we didn't get a sort of TNG encounter at Farpoint where, you know, they even waste far too long getting to know what the ship can do and stuff like that. They really didn't do anything to explain what the Discovery can do other than a throwaway line about it has a lot of science labs and some of the doors are guarded with guys with guns.
Yeah, and as much as I like the outside of the ship, the inside of the ship felt like something out of Wing Commander. Like, there was nothing, I didn't find anything unique looking about the inside of the ship. You know, every one of the ships always has, you know when you're in the engine room.
Right, yeah.
And I never knew when I was, they were in the engine room for a while, right?
I guess they were. I thought that was a science lab.
Oh, was it? I don't know. I just assumed that was the engine room.
Is that guy the engineer? I guess we'll figure out these roles going forward. If Stamets is actually an engineer, he's more of a biologist, it seems, but he's working on the technological aspects of it.
But just in general, though, like the interior of, I didn't mind the hallway, like that one hallway shot that they do where she's talking to Saru. Is that his name?
Yeah, Saru, I think.
That was fun. That felt kind of like Star Trek, but I mean, everything else. None of the design of the rest of the ship really felt, it just felt really bland and really kind of forgettable sci-fi.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, so another thing, maybe this is going off track. Why do they get to have lunch in the cafeteria? You've got a ship full, you got five or four convicts. And you just bring them to the cafeteria and let them have lunch?
Yeah.
And then when it's clear that three of them are going to try and beat up the other one,
you
just go, let's just see what happens here. And then, but on the other hand, from the convict's point of view, is there a stupider move than trying to jump the fourth convict in a room filled entirely with Starfleet officers?
Well, clearly packing heat, a couple of them, but they stand up and sort of grab at their holsters and stuff. Yeah, I think that scene is a good example of what went wrong with the episode for me. It felt like this sort of scene that is totally meaningless and is only advancing the plot in a lot of ways, which is it, though?
Well, she knows Vulcan Kung Fu, which is apparently a thing.
Well, advancing the plot as opposed to advancing the story, I guess, would be the distinction. Like, her getting into that fight causes the next scene to happen.
Oh, yeah, I see. Yep.
It doesn't teach you anything about her, I guess, other than the fact that she knows Vulcan Kung Fu, and apparently Vulcan Kung Fu is sort of mocked in the universe, I guess. No one particularly likes it. That's that kind of a scene. I actually thought that the scene where they're transporting the convicts felt very non-Star Trek-y to me.
Yeah, I felt that too. I couldn't put my finger on why, but yeah.
It came down to even just the... I sound negative, but I don't really like the warp effect that they're showing us. Like, this is how things look when you're at warp, kind of. Cloudy, glowy stuff that's going on. And I did like this new alien species that's basically like a sort of aphids for electricity. They'll just let them latch onto your ship. That seems Star Trek-y to me. But yeah, something about that just didn't ring true to me. And then it tied into the whole convict scene. And I guess the other convicts are gone at this point. I don't know why they came onto the Discovery at all, but now they're gone.
Yeah. And going back to the actual Discovery itself, they go out of their way to talk about how much of a science ship it is. And I was thinking, okay, that's interesting. Sure. Yeah, science ship, that's very Star Trek-y kind of thing.
We know that it becomes a warship in the next episode.
And then in the preview for the next thing, it's like, we are no longer a science ship. We are now a warship. And I was like, what the fuck, man? Like, I was in the show's corner after the first two episodes, defending it from the people who were criticizing exactly that kind of stuff. I saw a lot of stuff about people being, upset that it was all about war now and Star Trek's not about war and all that kind of stuff.
Which I totally disagree in context of the first two episodes.
Me too. I can understand why that might rub people the wrong way on first glance, but I mean, I didn't think that was a deal breaker. But, I mean, now that it's like, I don't know. It's tough. What would we have done 30 years ago this year if we were doing this for Star Trek The Next Generation? Would we be talking about it the same way as we did when we covered TNG a couple years ago?
No, because I feel...
Or would we be talking about it the way we're talking about this show?
You mean if we were new to the... When Encounter at Farpoint came out, what would
yeah,
we have thought?
Yeah.
I think that the Encounter at Farpoint criticism when it came out was, as in my opinion, as dishonest as the criticism of the Discovery prologues were. It's not it's not a truthful, like, if it, the most criticism I think that you could have leveled at it was, this was not a very good episode, and it also feels very derivative of the TOS series in a lot of ways. Like, that would be a fair sort of criticism of TNG. But to me, TNG's Encounter at Farpoint was clear in the story it set out to do. And it was a bad story, but at least they told that story and then they moved forward with it.
Yeah, yeah.
Here, I feel like we've spent three episodes. Two of them were pretty good, but we're sort of treading water in a frustrating way that I wish that... At the same time, I wish the story would move forward. I also want more of the standalone-ness. Like, I need to... If you're going to, I feel, just as a creator of the show, if you want to move Star Trek in a different direction, give me a little bit. You have to front load the season with a little bit of Star Trek stuff. You know what I mean? Like, give me an away mission. Give me a diplomat that we have to transport somewhere. You know, and give me that sort of boring shit.
Let's not go that far.
Like, does that make sense to you? Like, I don't need this immediate jump into the story. I could kind of deal with a little bit of table setting for this universe, which I think that I'm frustratingly ignorant to as to where the Federation stands at this point in time. I feel like I need that kind of information.
No, I would agree. Because, I don't know where the ship is, where the Discovery is. Like, what are they doing there? Why are they there?
Are they in a dangerous place?
Yeah. I mean, are they just doing the same thing the Glenn was doing? And where was the Glenn? Like, I didn't realize that I cared that much about where in space stuff is, but it just, I guess just for the, you know, for context of what the hell's going on in the show, it really does help. Like, what is the mission of the Discovery ship?
Right, yeah.
You know, I mean, like, even...
That's something Lorca should have said in his first monologue, right?
Yeah, there's even just like a casual throwaway exposition line, because again, there's a lot of exposition in this fucking episode, I'll tell you that much. It felt very much like a pilot again, in that there were multiple characters who were like, listen, I don't know all these different languages and have understanding of all this technology just so I can sit here and not tell you that the problem is that when I was a child, my father didn't tell me I could be a Starfleet, so that's why I worked really hard to become a Starfleet officer so I could sit here and solve this problem. It's like, all right, we get it. You're a hard ass with daddy issues.
Yes.
Like, there was a little bit of that stuff. There was no exposition in terms of the stuff that mattered.
Right.
Like you said, you know, Lorca could have had one paragraph of dialogue that just kind of gave you an idea of what the Discovery was as far as, like, its mission, where it was in space, and what the next thing it was going to be doing was.
Right, yeah. Yeah, no, I 100% agree with that. I think we need a little bit of table setting in this show at this point, because I'm equally lost about where things stand. And we also didn't get any Klingons in this episode, which I was a little bit disappointed.
Well, there was one.
Oh, right. Yeah. In the dead body.
Or like,
the dead pile.
Or 3 to 5 if you count the dead ones.
Yeah. So, I mean.
Like, what the fuck? Who cares? How? That monster thing, right? Can you think of any possible way? And maybe this will surprise me. Maybe I'll be eating crow later.
Yeah, we could be.
Can you think of any possible way that anything they're going to do with that monster is going to be at all satisfying?
No. It's all, anything that happens with that monster is going to feel derivative of something else, probably Star Wars, I feel like.
Yeah.
That's a Star Wars
monster.
Or Alien. Or
Alien,
yeah, right, exactly.
Like, I was waiting for something else. Like, I was waiting for them to subvert that thing somehow. You know, like, when the Klingon showed up, I was like, oh, okay. Oh, I didn't realize. Maybe it's a Klingon who was doing all this stuff. Nope, it's just your standard space monster.
Yeah, I thought when the Klingon walked out, I thought they were setting up the spores take over people type zombie story. You know what I mean? They didn't do that.
I don't
know. Let's talk. We're going to wrap this up soon, but let's talk about the the technological breakthrough that they're talking about here, which is the universe is like an organism, and we are going to exploit some spores to go every which way immediately and then come back in the blink of an eye. What'd you think of it?
I thought it was stupid.
I liked the fact that it sort of stems from the Stamets guy makes a point about how physics and biology are related. And a lot, like mm-hmm. you can't have biology without the laws of physics. So in some ways, biological organisms are just physical systems, which is a very modern take on that kind of stuff. And I think that it's interesting that they went in that way. My big problem is because this is a prequel, we know this technology has to fail somehow.
Yeah, yeah.
And B, it's too like sparkly mystical kind of in a lot of weird yeah. ways. Like I needed something a little bit more sci-fi-y about it, or like, you know, it's kind of Event Horizon-y in a lot of ways. Like something obviously yeah. has to go wrong when they use this technology to go far. The ship itself can only go couple hundred yards or something, but the other ship was going, which is kind of a neat reference. I think they said to the Beta Quadrant, which would make sense, and then coming back. So I'm a little bit, they'll have to come up with something really clever to impress me about whether or not this technology was a good story point to go forward with.
Yeah, for me it was kind of what you're saying about how you know that this technology is, they don't use it, right? And going forward, we know that already. And I think this crosses a line that I didn't really know that I hadn't considered, but I think this crosses it. Where in the previous two episodes, I had talked about how I don't mind the fact that they've updated technology because, you know, you can't just make it look like it did in 1967. You just can't do that. So they've updated things. They updated most of the stuff fairly reasonably. The aesthetics, some of the communication stuff. I didn't think it was too egregious overall. This technology is too egregious. Again, I don't know if that's me being a Star Trek fan, looking at it from just like where it takes place in Star Trek or as just a story point, because I mean, I guess you could make the argument that if you were watching this show in a vacuum, this plot point is not out of bounds for Star Trek. Like yeah. that thing seems like something Star Trek would do.
Yeah.
But I don't know. It seems to be a larger long form story point, and I think it's egregiously out of bounds for the technology that they should have.
Yes, I think I would. This is maybe too like nerdy of a thing, but I think it does have story implications. Where if this was a series set after, if this was the last or like latest Star Trek series, like it took place after all the other series, I might be willing to be okay with this technology.
Yeah, I was thinking the exact same thing. Yeah,
but it's just. And it's funny because I've sort of been arguing that I don't really care about those little things, but like this is a huge component of the Star Trek universe. Like this kind of how they travel around is very important to the series.
Yeah, and you could argue it is the most important thing in the series,
right? Exactly,
because it's in the name of the show.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean that them moving around and using this technology, which we never see again, is just, it was my biggest fear going into the prequels, and I hope they come out of it in some kind of clever way instead of just like, you know, Lorca saying, well, Jesus, we opened Pandora's box back there. I good thing we closed it. We'll never open that again.
Unless they go to the future.
Sure.
And all of a sudden, TNG crowd with all their mirror universe goatees show up. I'm down if they do that. Yeah, I'm cool.
He might save it. All right. Well,
no,
I think
I'm not looking forward to that. What I am looking forward to is when the show starts a death spiral, when they do, all that stuff starts coming out at once.
Yes,
where it's like you start getting TNG stuff, and then Walter Koenig's still alive. Let's bring him back for some reason.
Lorca is just browsing William Shatner's Twitter feed for some reason yeah. in his red room. Yeah. If you guys don't follow them, they Shatner and Jason Isaacs have a very funny, friendly banter going about their role, sort of a mock rivalry. It's kind of funny to follow both of them. But
I heard Shatner's Twitter feed's gotten kind of dark lately.
I don't understand his Twitter feed. I don't understand 90% of the stuff he tweets about. He tweets a lot about Outlander for some reason. And as far
the
as
show?
I can tell, yeah, as far as I can tell, he's not cool. involved in it. So I don't really understand why he's tweeting about it so much.
Yeah, must be a fan. Yeah, I read something. I read something recently that his Twitter feed has gotten really right wing lately.
No, he does not deal kindly with social justice folks.
Oh,
like,
I see.
The people who sort of bother him about that, he really kicks back at them. And he doesn't ignore a lot of it. That's kind of the way to go about it. I wouldn't call him right wing. I would just call him he's not willing to take the high road and sort of ignore it, I guess would be the way to describe it.
Okay.
But he's also 90 years old, so he can do whatever the fuck he wants
to do
at this point.
Yeah, he's earned it at this point, I guess.
So we're going to wrap it up there. Let's play an audio clip, and then me and Clay will come back and sort of wrap this thing up.
I thought you were in a prison shuttle.
I'm still here. Hope you don't mind.
I'm glad. Here's a thing most people don't know about me. I'm going to be a captain someday. The thing is that there are still some things I need to learn. And I know that you were one of the most highly regarded first officers in Starfleet, and I have read everything there is on Georgiou.
Captain Georgiou.
Chris, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to.
It's okay.
Wow, is that a book?
When I was a kid, after my parents were killed, my foster mother on Vulcan used to read it to me and her son. She and I were the only humans in the house. It's how I learned that the real world doesn't always adhere to logic. Sometimes down is up. Sometimes up is down. Sometimes when you're lost, you're found.
All right, Clay. So that's it. We ended the third episode, Context is for Kings. And I think we were both similarly unimpressed by this one. And I think they can right the ship going forward. I'm not going to say this is a completely lost series or anything like that. I'm more negative because I was impressed by the two opening episodes. And this one felt like the kind of episode that I was hoping the show would try to stay away from. And instead it went sort of feet first into it. And it didn't come out worse for the wear, I don't think.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm, you know, again, it's tough talking about it because, you know, you look at TNG and everybody says about, well, TNG and I guess all Star Trek except for the first one because there only was three seasons, but it's always, oh, well, yeah, by season three comes, they figure it all out, you know. Are we supposed to be able to do that with this show?
No, that's a different era. That's when there were five TV shows on at any time, and you could afford to not be very good for 57 episodes.
Yeah, and I think just the especially with the fact that they're making you pay for it, and how many episodes do they do in the season?
15.
15? Yeah, that's a short, well, short-ish season. They're making you pay for it. You got to be better out of the gate than this.
Yeah, yeah. It's tough too. We liked the first two episodes. We were pleasant about it. And I'm going to rewatch this one, and you can follow me on Twitter at Penske File if you want to sort of hear my updated thoughts. I will watch it again to see if anything changes, but I think a lot of our conversation here depends on what happens going forward and whether or not these characters get fleshed out. And I'm sure they will be fleshed out.
You know, I guess that's a problem too, because one of the things that I really don't like is I don't like it when people judge the story without seeing the entirety of the story. Like, you know, if you read two chapters into a book and say, oh, that book sucked. It's like, well, you didn't finish the book, so you don't know exactly how the rest of it may have changed, you know, your view in the first part, you know, that kind of stuff. Or like you're shutting off a movie halfway through. It's like, oh, this movie's – well, you didn't finish the movie, so, you know.
Yeah.
Or it's – I guess the best analogy would be comic books. Like comic books have been doing a lot of long-form storytelling lately where everything is really – you know, it's very connected. And there have been a lot of fairly recent books that have been written off after the first issue because you're judging the entire story based on 22 pages out of like 250 pages worth of story. And I don't really like that approach, but it's tough not to do it sometimes. And I don't know if maybe we're sinking into that a little bit. Like I feel like you can judge something like this on its own merits inside the parameters of what an episode of TV is supposed to do.
Right.
And in that case, I don't think this was very successful.
Well, I mean, to tie into your book comparison, I think that it would be foolish to have an opinion of the entire story without finishing it, but you can be like, wow, those were two terrible chapters in a row.
Yeah.
Like you can do that kind of a thing and maybe our opinion will change, but judging, I think we've done a decent enough job of not really saying that the series is a failure at this point, but this episode certainly was not particularly all that good.
Yeah, and I wonder if it's a difficult thing specific to Star Trek because this is the first time that we've had to do this where we're looking at something that's a serialized story. Like looking at the other episode, at the other series, you can call out episodes here and there and be like, yeah, this episode is terrible, but it doesn't really impact it as much because it's not part of a whole.
Right.
As much as this is.
Yep.
And so I don't know I think my final word on this episode is I wasn't impressed. I didn't really like it. I haven't written the show off yet. Talk to me at the end of the season.
Right. Well, we'll be back next week with The Butcher's Knife Cares Not for the Lamb's Cry, which is a great episode title.
That's a very Star Trek title.
Yeah. It is. Yeah, that's a very Season 3 TOS title, or Season 6 Deep Space Nine, I think, is where I'd put it.
I hope there's an episode called Lorca's Brain.
And outside of that, I think we're going to just wrap it up. But I think the next week episode will be late by a day because we have a wedding on Sunday. So we'll probably get it out on Tuesday, I think.
I don't know, man. We might want to just do it. we might after this episode, we might be in the right state of mind coming home from a wedding to just watch some Star Trek Discovery and talk about it for an hour.
We'll see how it goes. We'll keep people posted about our progress. I'll live tweet the wedding and then let you know if I'm actually heading home or not.
You won't be able to hear the fact that I'm wearing my tie around my forehead.
Thank you very much for listening, guys. If you enjoyed the content, you can follow us all on the social media that's in the video description below. If you're on YouTube, or you can go into the podcast description, all that social media, Facebook, Twitter, et cetera, et cetera. You can go to Patreon if you want to support the show. It's a very, very helpful way to support the show, keep things going if you enjoy it. You can go to patreon.com/thepenskyfile. We lost a couple patrons this past round, so I think it's due to you, Clay, not enjoying Deep Space Nine's brilliance in its first season. So do you have any answers for that?
Hey, there's a lot of episodes, man, and I'm gonna be watching them. So,
or maybe they just didn't like Discovery's opening two episodes, and
it's possible.
Maybe they'll be back.
Maybe this whole endeavor backfired.
Well, yeah, definitely go to patreon.com/thepenskyfile if you want to
listen,
support
guys,
the show.
Listen, guys, Deep Space Nine is my favorite show. I love Quirk.
Hey, Bill Gates has just become our patron. He's donated.
Love Quirk. And his interplay with Frodo is just
magnificent.
Magnifique, yes.
$10 patrons, you guys get a shout. I appreciate it very, very much for you guys supporting the show. It's Tarek Letzi.
However, how long do I have to wait before Sisko gets to the thong song?
Well, we're watching the rated, the little black and white sticker in the corner of the episode, so it actually takes a very long time for him to get there. Mature and teen ratings. $10 patrons, thank you very much, guys. It's Tariq Latif, Joint Mango, Ben Douglas, Kyle Barrett, Vincent Adolman, Stephen Cobb, Tex Owl Bear. Thank you very much for supporting the show. Very much appreciated. We'll be back next week, as I said, and as otherwise we're getting Deep Space Nine up on Thursday. So whatever episode, it's the Vortex episode. So look forward to that. Clay, thank you very much for coming on. Thank you for watching Discovery. We'll see what happens next week, huh?
Oh, yeah, hope so. And it's the 50th anniversary of The Prisoner this week, or last week. Right. So check out our coverage of that show at backinthevillage.com.
Yep, The Prisoner podcast. You guys can go listen to that. It was our second podcast that we started after the Star Trek thing. And it finished because it's much shorter than Star Trek. That's about it. Happy birthday to The Prisoner. Happy birthday to TNG, all that stuff. Belated birthdays to both of them. And me and Clay will be back next week. See you then.